Hello, friends, and welcome to episode number 252 of Bat Flips and Maple Dips. I'm Patrick, he's Justin. Justin, the series with the Padres did not go the way that we had hoped. They were able to scrounge a victory here Thursday afternoon, but still lost the first two games. Not quite the way I wanted to start the week, but I guess since all the other teams in the division also struggled, I guess it all cancels out.
Yeah, I guess so. All right. I mean, it would have been nice to gain some more ground, but now Baltimore and Tampa are playing four games this weekend starting today, so the Blue Jays are not going to lose ground to one of those teams this weekend. So
yeah, both of them can't win four games.
Exactly.
So
we were talking before the show, like, obviously the ideal scenario is probably a split where the Blue Jays can somehow win all three games against Seattle to gain one game overall, or yeah, one team just decides to sweep the other team and the Blue Jays can gain some ground on that team.
Yeah, or a meteor strike.
The wild cards. Meteor strike. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty dark, but that's...
I don't really want a meteor strike
happened, we'd probably all die, though, so if it was that catastrophic.
Well, then that's probably the best case scenario. we all long for death.
Hey, there goes my mortgage. Sweet. I don't have to pay it anymore.
Hey, you don't have to pay it back now. if you like what we do, go ahead and find us at BFMD Podcast. We're everywhere. We're like... What's everywhere? Smallpox? No, that's
oxygen.
Gone. Oxygen. What's more abundant than that?
The crippling reality that we can't afford to live.
Man, we're going deep into the existential core of our generation. I don't know if I can stomach that. I'm not ready for the cold water. Well, you know where to find us, bfmdpodcast.com. Thanks for taking the time to listen to us. We're going to pump through this episode real quick. You know what, Justin? I'm gonna steal your news by saying the two things very quickly.
Yep.
Number one, Hyunjin Ryu is gonna rehab start Friday with the Buffalo Bisons.
Correct.
Looking forward to it.
Looking forward to start before
replacing Alec Manoa. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
That would be so ideal.
And then Chad Green, of course, is rehabbing in Dunedin on Saturday. So the boys will be back in town.
Yeah.
Adam Simber was moved to the 60-day IL, which frees up a 40-man rotation, or 40-man roster spot.
One of them.
one of them, yeah, that'll be for Ryu, since he's probably closer to being ready.
Yep.
And then they'll have to make the tough choice between whether they want a healthy, fresh Chad Green or Mitch White. it's going to be a tough one. We'll see. Anyway, that's it for the news. There's really nothing interesting. Unless you're interested in things like advanced metrics on home runs, in which case, boy, have I got some weird news for you. Because Vladdy and Kirk hit a home run today, and they were both 370 feet exactly. I found that very strange.
Baseball.
Let's talk about the series against the Padres, Justin. Go ahead.
Yeah, I attempted to watch this game on Tuesday. I made it about 40 pitches, which was not even out of the first inning yet for Alec Manoa.
Wow.
And then I shut it off. The umpire was Malachi Moore was also terrible, which didn't help. I watched Pete Walker get tossed too on video. And so I'm an umpire, so I can comment on this. Pete Walker had barely gotten to the mound and Malachi Moore was already walking out there. That's not really what you do as an umpire. So here's kind of what they taught me when I started umpiring. Basically, you wait for the coach to like get over the chalk line. You wait for him to get onto the mound. Then kind of what you do is usually you'll brush the plate off, and then you'll stand up, you'll look out there, see if they're close to breaking it up, and then you'll start walking. So you give him like a good 10 seconds after he's gotten there before you start making your way out there. Because the mound visit's supposed to last like 30 seconds max by the time he gets to the mound, even shorter, ideally. So Malachi Moore was kind of looking for a fight because the Blue Jays dugout had been kind of chirping him the entire time. So he was going to go out there and see if Pete Walker wanted to get tossed. And obviously Pete did because he said something to him without looking at him and then Moore tossed him. So I think it was just a bit Bush League on the umpire's part there.
Are you surprised? He was bad.
No, I'm not. And I mean, Malachi Moore is a pretty young umpire by MLB standards. So I think it's probably a little bit of like him trying to establish himself as like a don't fuck with me kind of move. By the way, on this umpire crew, he was on second base in the first game, but he did the home plate today. Stu Sherwater from Regina, Saskatchewan. So pretty cool. It's the only Canadian full-time umpire in the big leagues right now. So interesting. But yeah, I thought that was pretty bullish. Okay. But Manoah was awful. That's all I want to say about it. For some reason, he's going to get another start on Sunday, but I mean, hopefully Ryu is good in Buffalo tomorrow, and this can be Manoah's last start with the Blue Jays this season, because I just can't. You mentioned it in our group chat. You said that the Jays can't afford an automatic loss every 5 days. And right now, that's what it is. Unless they go out and score 40 runs, they're going to lose every time Manoah starts. It's just a fact. He's not effective one bit. What else is there to say?
There's nothing. My man is cooked.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Musgrove was great on Tuesday as well for the Padres. Like the Jays probably
full credit.
The Jays might not have won this game no matter who was pitching because they only scored one run the entire time.
We have to be honest. All three of the starters for San Diego all were
pretty good.
They exceeded expectations.
Yeah, I mean, they're all good pitchers, so I'm not surprised.
So there you go. Yeah. Blake Snell didn't really have a great start today. He had 7 walks, but the thing is, the Jays couldn't do anything with that. So
yeah,
what are you supposed to do?
He still took the L, but I mean, he only gave up one run. The Blue Jays were fortunate enough that Bassett was able to go 6 shutout innings and scatter 4 hits and 1 walk. But we got to talk about Bassett's charity thing a little bit too.
We haven't mentioned it on the show yet.
Chris Bassett and his wife Jessica, they're partnering with Jays Care. It's called the Bassett's Pitch In program. They're going to donate $10,000 for each game the Blue Jays win when Chris Bassett pitches this season, and they went retroactive to opening day. So when it was announced, the Blue Jays had won 12 games that Bassett had pitched in. And that's not just that he starts and not that he gets the win. It's that anytime the Blue Jays win in a game, he pitches, which is awesome. So they had donated they've already committed $120,000 US, and Bassett went out and got another win today. So that's up to $130,000 US now, which is pretty awesome. So, I mean, they both said that they've done things with past teams like Oakland and the Mets, but they've kind of always done things under the radar, which a lot of baseball players like to do. So that they don't want the publicity. They just want to give back. But they said that this was the program that Jays Care is doing. They felt like it was good that it should be known that this was going on. They wanted more publicity for Jays Care itself. So they thought they would publicly announce this one. And I think it's great. They're both really happy to be in Toronto. Their son, Colson, the most recent addition to the family about a month ago there, was born in Canada. He's a Canadian citizen, dual citizen. So they wanted to give back to this country that is now partly, it's become their home. So I think it's great. I love it.
Yep.
Big W.
Yep, it's cool. I'm down with it. He was good today as well.
Yeah.
So is Berríos.
Berríos was great.
It's really just Manoah's. Yeah. Just he's cooked, and
it sucks.
It's such a shame. Like, I don't know why they rushed him to come back after like a couple of very pithy starts. He very clearly cannot locate in the zone. He doesn't have the zip on any of his stuff.
He's got no swing and miss.
Yeah, like he goes out there and he's like super sweaty and fatigued after like 30 pitches, and none of them are. There's no bite to anything he's got.
Yeah.
It's like he's gassed immediately.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like,
it's
what's happening?
I'm looking at the wrong. I was looking at the wrong game. I was like, his pitches look great, but that was Berríos' pitches. I'm just going back on the Savant to look at this because,
while you do that and prepare yourself. I will say this about that game. The one bright spot, I think, was Jay Jackson got us 6 outs with just a hit.
Right.
Very happy with that. Nate didn't really have a great night. And Mitch White got us 6 outs, but he gave up another 3 runs. He's just, Mitch White can't really be trusted for anything but doing bulk when we're already down by like 10 runs.
And I've seen some people on Twitter saying that they'd rather the Blue Jays keep White and DFA Ryu, and I don't understand that argument.
DFA Hwangjin Ryu, the guy who, like,
yeah,
brought this franchise out of its like shitty hole.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. It's a weird, very niche crowd of Blue Jays fans. Some people who I think usually have good takes, but right now that they don't.
They should just delete their Twitter because Twitter is
a rat hole.
It is a rat hole, but that's an even worse take because.
So,
what has Mitch White done for us?
Nothing. Nothing at all. And their main argument is over. He was only throwing 89. Mark Burley was only throwing 89, and he was still effective.
Like, so a guy has to be throwing 97 miles an hour in order to be effective.
And Mitch White doesn't do that either. So,
has this person ever heard of Tom Glavine?
Yeah. Have they ever heard of any pitcher?
I rest my case.
Yeah. So
we're done with this.
I'm looking back at the game on Tuesday and the game on Wednesday. And I'm specifically looking at called strike plus whiff percentage here, Patrick. Joe Musgroves was 28. Yu Darvish for the Padres on Wednesday was 31%. And Jose Berríos was 32%. So 28, 30, and 31 for those three starters. Alek Manoah's called strike plus whiff percentage was 16, half. He also had 21 foul balls and 13 balls in play in, like, what was it, like 3 innings? Just not effective pitches. He had 1 or 3 whiffs on his slider and 12 swings. Had 3 whiffs on his 4-seamer in 14 swings. No whiffs on the sinker in 11 swings. And 3 swings on the changeup without a whiff. He just has no deception right now. And there were only, out of 4 4-seam fastballs, there were only 7 called strike plus whiffs. Like, it's just, only 47% of those pitches were in the zone on the 4-seamer. 42% of his sinkers were in the zone. 36 slider and 56 changeup. Looking just at Joe Musgrove in that game, his 4-seam fastball is at 56% zone percentage. That's up 9% over Manoah, and that was Musgrove's 4th most used pitch. His cutter is at 56. His slider is at 60. So he's throwing pitches where they're good enough to swing at, but guys aren't hitting them because they're just more effective. And I mean, I don't know what you can say. Like, Manoah's spin rates are just down on everything. Like, his slider only has 2,000 RPMs. And that was 2,104 RPMs on the slider average. And Musgrove's average on his slider is 2,800. That just tells you that there's just not enough break happening. There's not enough action. It's a flat slider right now, and it has no deception. It's just, it's bad. I don't know like what more we can say about this guy. He has no swing and miss stuff right now. And he has nothing that guys are hitting weakly right now. The only pitch that I thought looked remotely okay was his changeup, and only threw it 9 times. It's like, what are we doing?
That was the exact question I was about to ask you.
Why is he here?
Like, what are we doing here? Why even? I don't even want to analyze it because, like, I don't understand. Is there literally no single pitcher in this entire organization that couldn't give us 9 outs?
Trevor Richards was doing it when Manoah was down there.
It's just like, when he's this awful, like, the thing is, like, and no, like, the answer's not Mitch White. I don't want Mitch White to start games. I don't even want Mitch White in MLB.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a roster player. But, you know, the farm is shallow, and the AAA team isn't very good when it comes to pitching. There's a few bright spots, but they're not starters. So what is the what are we supposed to do?
Yeah.
The answer is not trot Alec Manoah out there and hope he magically transforms overnight into somebody who's not Alec Manoah.
Did you see what Ross Atkins said after the game?
God,
they view it as a blip, this last performance. They're putting more stock in his performance against Detroit, a 4A team, than they are against a team that is still in playoff contention, albeit not by much, the Padres, who actually have a good
usually
lineup.
It's Toronto Blue Jays fans who are the delusional ones. In this case, the delusion belongs...
It's the front office and the coaching staff.
Right, yeah, I'm right there with you. It's pure delusion. The numbers, there's nothing, there are no stats to support an Alec Manoah renaissance after an okay start and then a brutal start.
Because even think back to last year, Patrick, Yusei Kikuchi struggled. They put him in the bullpen because he even had options, and he himself said that he was willing to go down to AAA to stay on a starter's 5-day like schedule and try and figure things out. Yusei Kikuchi, a guy who is a major league veteran, signed a 3-year deal, was willing to go down to the minors, and they said, no, I'll put you in the bullpen. And granted, it did work out for him. He was good in the pen, and then he was been better this season. But Alec Manoah, a guy who has only a season and a half of professional baseball in the big leagues coming into this year, struggles for 2 months. They finally send him down. He gets into one shitty rehab start. Or not even a rehab start. One shitty start against the Florida Complex League team of like rookies and like teenagers. Like there's some 16-year-olds that play in that league, and gets lit up. They put him up to Double A. He manages to scrap his way through like whatever 4 or 5 innings, whatever it was, and somehow not give up a ton of runs, even though he had a lot of guys on base. And then they're like, "Oh yeah, you're fine. You're coming back up to the major leagues." Like it's wild to me that. Is everybody blind like in this organization right now?
What's going on?
Does Alec Manoah have blackmail in everybody? Like, why are they keeping him in the rotation?
He's got something on somebody. The Jays are 5-10 when Alec Manoah starts for the year.
Yeah,
he has a grand total of 3 quality starts on the season.
And they've somehow won 2 extra games on top of those.
And yeah. And actually, they lost one of his quality starts.
Yeah.
They won the first game. They won the game against St. Louis 10-9, where he was bad. Then he had a quality start against Kansas City, who are bad at baseball. He had a quality start against the New York Yankees. We lost that game 3-2. And then he has a quality start against the Detroit fucking Tigers, who we beat 12-2. The rest is like, yeah, okay. To be fair, one of those starts was one out away from being a quality start.
Right.
The one against Baltimore.
Yeah, fair.
But it's still facts are facts.
We're cherry picking like the best out of a season of absolute dog shit.
His FIP is 6.28.
Yeah. We're basically saying, like, it's like your dog ate your wedding ring and you have to sort through their poop to find it. That's what we're doing with these starts right now.
There's not enough. Like, his performance against Detroit was the blip.
Yeah.
It's not the other way around.
His performance against the Yankees was a blip that one time, too.
His whip is 1.836 for the season, according to BREF. So
he's walking more guys than he's, like, getting out in some starts. It's pathetic at this point. Like, we keep having to talk about it because they keep doing nothing about it. And I'm sick of talking about it because I'd let them just send him to the minors, leave him down there, make him earn his way back instead of just giving him his job back after one start in Double A where he doesn't look like absolute shit.
his FIP and his WHIP are almost double what they were last year and the year before. And actually, if you add up his first 2 years in MLB, you can practically add his two WHIPs together.
Yeah.
And then you get the third one. It's that bad.
Yeah, we love Alek Manoah.
Yes, of course.
We want what's best for him. Like, we're hard on him as fans because we know how good he's been, and we know that this version of him isn't right. Something's wrong. And we're mad because it seems like the organization doesn't care about his long-term career. We've seen this before with guys. Like, we saw it with Ricky Romero, how he had a really good season, was an all-star, and then all of a sudden something went a little bit wrong, and they never did anything to fix it. They just kept letting him, oh, he'll figure it out in the big leagues. He'll figure it out. He never did. And he was out of the big leagues by the time he was in his early 30s.
This is exactly what they discuss in Moneyball, where it's like, you can't just force it to happen, like a player to get great just by getting them more appearances and more innings. It doesn't work like that.
Sometimes you have to take a step back, rebuild it, and come back late, and come back hopefully stronger. And when they sent him down to Florida, I hoped that's what they were going to do. And then a month later, he was back. And there just seems to be no reason for it. Like, especially now with Ryu coming back, you've got to think, and I hate that it's going to happen, but Manoah's probably going to get lit up on Sunday. And you just have to hope that the organization does something about it after that outing, if it's not a good outing, which, I mean, we've seen nothing to say to show that it's going to be good. You just have to hope that they do something about it. This Mariner team is still sniffing around the wild card. Like, they only have, what, 7 fewer wins than the Blue Jays right now?
Yep, they can bang too.
Yeah, and they can still hit. And they're throwing 2 really good pitchers in the first 2 games, in terms of their numbers anyway. And then a guy in the third game against Manoah who doesn't have as much experience, obviously, but Logan Gilbert's like a command god. He can strike guys out. He doesn't give up a lot of walks. Like, he's really solid. And Gausman's coming back on Saturday for his first start in a couple of weeks, since he missed the All-Star game and then missed a couple starts through the rotation. Or turn and a half, basically, where they're going to slot him back in. So it's not going to be easy. And I mean, Kikuchi's got to dance around Julio Rodriguez right at the very top of the lineup, and that's always tough, especially for Kikuchi, a guy who gives up a lot of bombs. And we saw Julio Rodriguez in the home run derby in Seattle hit a lot of home runs to left field. And that's where he's going to be looking to go with Kikuchi on Friday, like tomorrow night. And I just, I don't know, man.
How many games are left in the season?
The Blue Jays have played 97.
Well, how many will be left when Manoah makes his next start?
The Blue Jays have played 97 games now. So Manoah's going to start game number 100, which will mean there'll be 62 left after that.
So
that would be another 12 starts if they keep 5 days.
So that's like, we're talking about 12
losses.
Losses.
You could even be generous and say 10 losses out of those 12, if you're feeling lucky.
And that's 10 losses before you get to the rest of the games.
Yeah.
That you have to win.
Yeah.
And you're already playing from behind against divisional opponents because Alek Manoah started a bunch of those games. Guess what happened? He got lit up like a Christmas tree.
The Blue Jays have something like 25 more games against the American League East, and they're mostly in August and September because they're not playing any divisional opponents right now.
They pretty much have to win all of them. They have to win all of them.
I think but with Baltimore and Tampa, they have 6 and 7. I can't remember which is which against those two teams left, and those are the two teams they're ahead of. And Manoah would be lined up to start at least 3 of those if they leave it on a five-man rotation, most likely.
Yeah, and they have to play Boston at least.
And the Yankees are still there, too. Like, the Yankees are still the Yankees. I mean, they're struggling right now, but, I mean, if they get Aaron Judge back, and they're still capable of beating teams because they're an American League East team with an above 500 record. So that means they're probably better than 20 other teams in baseball for this division. But yeah, it's, my God, it's just like, how much longer can this go on?
I mean, it'll get to the point where they'll get knocked out of the playoff race because they insist on starting every fifth game. They want to start a guy whose ERA is
above six. Do the Blue Jays not have like a sports psychology or like some sort of player development department? Like, why are those people not knocking the door down into like Ross Atkins and John Schneider's offices and saying, why the fuck are you starting this kid? It's not good for him. Like, he's getting shelled every time. You can't tell me that feels good.
Non-competitive and pitches. We don't have to, look, we've hammered this so many times.
You can't tell me that Manoah wants to be this bad. Like, he's got to want to do something about it. And, like, I don't know. Like, if you went up to Alec Manoah and you said, Alec, honestly, do you think that being at the major league level is helping you right now? If he said yes, he's lying to himself. Like, he's not helping the team win. He's helping them lose. He's making their lives much harder. That's all I got. I'm done.
I'm on board. I'm tired of talking about this because it's done more damage to the team than any individual thing, including poor
hitting,
poor on-field decisions made by Schneider, whether it's stretching Trevor Richards or stretching Tim Mazur or stretching Nate Pearson, whatever. This has cost more losses than any other decision, and it's not defendable.
And look, the Blue Jays have been shut out 5 times in their past 24 games, which isn't
That's bad.
Yeah, so like, you know, obviously there's 5 losses right there because you can't win if you don't score. So even the offense has been not so great either. They've shown some, like, obviously they've had a few outbursts of.
They were clutch against Arizona, and then they were virtually invisible against the Padres. Today. The only reason they didn't get swept was because Vladdy got a hold of one pitch. And Kirk got a hold of one pitch.
Yep. And like, you're going on the road to Seattle and the Dodgers. A tough West Coast trip. You're traveling 3 time zones. So that's not easy right away. You've got to play at 8:10 p.m. my time tomorrow, which is 10 p.m. Eastern time. So already it's like past the time when your game would usually be over for these guys in Toronto, or just ending at 10 p.m. local.
Dude.
So you're gonna be in deep already because of that.
They gave up. They had 7 walks against Blake Snell before he got bounced from the game, and they couldn't score a run.
Yeah, I know. And like, you've got Seattle, you've got the Dodgers, then you've got the Angels, who are suddenly back in the race because they were able to sweep the Yankees. Like, the Angels, Patrick, are 4.5 games out of a wild card spot now. They're still talking about trading Ohtani, but I mean, if they can beat the Blue Jays in 2 or 3 games, they're right with them again, you know. Like, it's crunch time.
If they get
a
juicy Manoah start, then
they wouldn't, because he's starting on Sunday. But I know what you mean. Oh no, they would. Yeah, they would. You're right. I was thinking Dodgers series, and then Baltimore comes to town for 4 games starting at the end of the month and into August, and then you have Boston and Cleveland on the road after that. So it's like, there's no breaks in this schedule anymore. Like, it's crunch time. You're going to Cincinnati in August. The Reds are good now. Philadelphia is a decent team. Like, the only weak point is Washington and Colorado at the end of August and early September, and then you have Oakland and Kansas City. But I mean, you've got like a little kind of 10-game window at the end of August and beginning of September to make hay against other teams that are terrible before you get Texas, Boston, New York, Tampa Bay, New York, Tampa Bay to close the season. Like, you got to do something. You got to get Manoah off this rotation. I mean, I would love it if Hyunjin Ryu came back and was good enough to do 4 or 5 innings of like similar numbers to what Kikuchi is doing. I would love that. I would take that all day. But I think you do have to look externally at this trade deadline, and I think your priorities have to be like a good, reliable veteran bat who can play outfield, second base, whatever it may be. Basically, a Whit Merrifield with more power. I mean, maybe a backup third baseman in case something happens to Chappie. I don't know if you need too much more help in the bullpen because you're gonna have to move guys out of there to get Chad Green back anyway. But I mean, there's ways for this team to improve, and I think the rotation has to be a consideration. Is that if you can bring in somebody who's a bona fide, say, an even number three or number four starter in the bigs right now, that still makes you so much better than what Alek Manoah is doing. You don't have to bring in an ace. We're not asking for Shohei Ohtani or like Corbin Burns or something. We're asking for somebody who can deliver a quality start.
I don't want to be that guy, but every time we talk about this and every time you mention what our needs are, do you know what name is immediately coming into my head and it's just fucking screaming it?
Mike Trout.
You know what pitcher? No, the pitcher.
I mean, probably. Is it Marcus Stroman?
Say it. It's Marcus Stroman. It's so annoying. It's so annoying.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Yeah. It's. Yeah. And it's like you. I don't try to be negative. I try to be pretty positive on this show, but I just. The thing that just makes me mad that they're letting Manoah go out there every 5 days outside of the month he was gone and just hurt his future, essentially. Like, and I don't know.
Let's move on from Manoah.
Yeah.
Let's bang the drum one more time for what our needs are at the deadline. Because we're getting closer to it. It's pretty obvious that we have an issue with hitting depth.
Yes.
In that there isn't really... We need a banger.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of trading to get Cody Bellinger so we can knock Kirk out of the lineup indefinitely.
And also the Astros wouldn't get him then because they're sniffing around that too.
Yeah, we got to be able to pay for Bellinger though. And that's the thing is like
he's really going to gut our farm further. He's not going to be a guy who commands a ton of like prospects, but he's a 2 month rental essentially.
What would it take to get Bellinger and Stroman at the same time?
Oh my God. Well, you're getting two major league ready players, so somebody off the major league roster is going for sure. And the guys who are tradable on this team, the guy who's probably the most valuable would be like Matt Chapman because he's Matt Chapman. He's on an expiring contract though, so the Cubs may not see too much value there.
They won't.
No, but you would have guys like Varsho who have a lot of control left. You'd have, I would say, Espinal and Biggio, guys who have a little bit of control as well as multi-positional versatility. And then that would... Honestly, like in terms of people the Blue Jays are probably willing to part with who have years of control, like it's really Biggio, Varsho, Biggio, Varsho, and Espinal. Those are really the only two guys positional on this roster that have control left after this season who would other teams might find value with because Chapman's a free agent. So.
Trading Varsho would be bad.
Bad.
Because that would mean we would have traded Gurriel and Gabriel Moreno for what would amount
to two months of Bellinger and
Marcus Stroman.
Yeah.
And then possibly after that, nothing.
Yeah, the Cubs are probably going to want
a Relvis Martinez.
Period. Yeah, I'd say a Relvis Martinez. They're going to want somebody, they're going to want guys who are close to big league ready. They're not going to just want like some like top 30 flyers. They're going to want some top 10 guys, some top five.
It's going to be Addison Barger.
Yeah. I could see Barger going too in a deal like that.
And then they're going to want a starter prospect.
Yeah. So like maybe like a Klopfenstein or something.
No.
A Sembro Bears.
No.
Like...
going to be higher than that.
Yeah, I know it's like you're hesitant because like we said they're both rentals, right? Like Stroman has an option that he's going to decline because he's going to try and go for a longer term deal.
Well, yeah, he wants the final, that, well, not the final, but the second to final contract, which will be worth a lot of.
He wants that big mid-30s, 3-4-5 year deal cash that he might be able to get, you know? Like, he's going to want that. So, he's going to decline the option. Bellinger's going to be a free agent, too. So, it's you've got to give to get. And, I mean, it's going to come down to what the Astros are, like, what other teams are offering. And the Blue Jays might get into a situation where they may, if they want to get either one of those guys or both of them, they may have to overpay a little bit. But you're going to have some money freeing up because you're not going to have to, you only have to pay 2 months worth of those guys' salaries and they're gone. You're going to lose Matt Chapman to free agency most likely. I don't know. His value has come back down to earth, thankfully, after that hot April he had, because he's been normal Matt Chapman really since then. Which is still fine. He's still a very good
baseball player. Yeah, the bidding war for him, period, is going to be...
Yeah, so here's your contracts that are coming off the books. You've got $20 million from Ryu that's going to be gone off the books after this year. Not sure it's going to happen with his future in major leagues. Depends how he pitches these last couple months. You've got $12.5 million that you're not going to be paying Matt Chapman. $9.3 million for Brandon Belt and $9 million for Kevin Kiermaier. Those are your like four contracts straight away that are gone. Those guys are all in their 30s now.
You're going to have money.
Yeah, you've got money. You're going to decline your mutual $18 million option with Whit Merrifield. You're going to pick up Jimmy Garcia's $5 million option. Depending what happens with Chad Green, you've got a $9 million option for next year. The next 3 years. It was that weird contract that we talked about way back at the beginning of the year when they signed it. And then everybody else on this roster is either signed or an arbitration. You've got two more years with Vladdy arbitration. You've got Bo locked up for those final 2 years at $12 million and $17.5 million in the third year. So, I mean, you're going to be looking to probably extend Vladdy this offseason. You don't want to get into that final year of arbitration eligibility in 2025 without something in place for the long term. So this is the winter to extend Vladdy. You've got two more arbitration years for Gerard Romano. You've got one more for Danny Jansen. One more for Adam Simber. Still three for Varsho, two for Biggio, three for Espinal, two for Meza, which is crazy that he's 31 and still has two more years of arbitration. And even Trevor Richards at age 30 has another year of arbitration. Swanson's got two more years. Kirk has three more years. Like, it's like these guys, besides the guys who are pending free agents, which is like a handful or just over a handful of guys, this team is still going to be largely intact going forward. Unless moves are made, obviously. But you're going to have some money to free up, and you're going to have to go out and replace Ryu as your 5-6 starter. And depending on what happens with Manoah over the winter, like if he comes back into spring training and looks like dog shit again, I don't know what to do with him.
Keep him in the minors, I guess. Either. What about, okay, I don't want to suggest this because it kind of disgusts me to say it. What if you make this trade? Let's just throw. I know you don't like hypotheticals. Would you do Bellinger and Stroman, and then for, I don't know, like two of Barger, Tiedemann, and Orelvis and Alek Manoah?
I don't think that's. I think that's an overpay. For like four months of players, you know, two-month contracts. Mm. And I don't know if the Cubs want Manoah at this point. Like he's almost an unknown again, you know, like nobody knows what's going to happen to him. He's not right now. And we've seen so many guys in their careers come in and just start their careers off so hot. And then they just fade into the oblivion.
Remember Dustin McGowan?
Yeah. Remember how Jesse Litch almost threw a complete game in his first start?
Yeah. Oh, I sure do.
Like, there's been so many guys. I remember how Kyle Drabek was supposed to be the next big thing. Like, it's
the
like...
The Jays are just not very good at developing pitching.
No.
Especially not really... Like, the only good homegrown reliever we have is Tim Meza.
And you could kind of call Jordan Romano a homegrown reliever in somewhat of a sense.
He was barely not on the team.
Yeah, looking at guys on this roster who are actually homegrown, Vladdy. I would say Romano, Bichette, Jansen, Biggio, Espinal, Meza, Trent Thornton, I guess you could call homegrown. Alejandro Kirk and Nate Pearson. And Nate Pearson took a long time to figure out.
That's a lot.
But I mean, you look at your rotation. Nobody in your rotation besides Manoah is homegrown right now. They're all free agent or trades. I guess all free agents because Gausman, Bassett, Berea was a trade and then a sign, I guess. So, but Bassett, Ryu, Gausman are all, and Kikuchi are all free agent signings. Berea's you traded for and then extended. But there's no homegrown talent in there besides Manoah, and right now he's the 10th best starter in this organization.
That's very generous of you.
I know. I was trying to figure out how low I could put him and still not sound like a dick, but like I don't know. And going back to your hypothetical, I don't know if the Cubs want Manoah right now. They definitely want those other guys, but I think giving up two top five prospects for two rental players is still an overpay.
What about Otto Lopez and
trade him?
What?
Trade him.
Yeah. He's the top five on our team.
Yeah, trade him.
Otto Lopez and Yasmer Zulueta.
Trade him.
Stroman and Bellinger.
Sure.
Is that an overpay?
I think you're maybe a little bit, but I don't think it's as much of an overpay as giving up a Tiedemann or an Urelvis.
I want to hang on to Urelvis.
There's still a bigger. There's a big difference between a number 1, 2, 3 prospect and a number 5.
Urelvis is just he's improved so much this year. I just
It's tough to walk away from that improvement.
He's a very attractive trade piece.
He really
is. If I were any team trying to make a trade for the Jays, I would tussle my way into getting Urelvis Martinez, depending on what they wanted.
Yeah, and I mean we've got another 10 days ish until the trade deadline hits, so it's getting down to the wire. And I mean, baseball is usually a sport where, especially now, they don't have the waiver deadline at the end of August anymore. There's a big flurry around deadline day now the last couple of seasons. And
yeah, it's not like the NHL, but it's starting to become a little bit closer to like the NHL.
Yeah, Ross Atkins mentioned it this week in his press conference that there are still so many teams who are like within that like 5 or 6 game back of the wild card. Like if you look in the American League, you've got Boston, the Yankees, the Angels, Seattle, and the Cleveland Guardians who are all within 6 games of that final wild card spot. So there's 5 teams right there, plus the 3 teams that are in wild card spots. So you've got 8 teams battling for wild card spots right now for 3 spots in the American League. There's only, I guess, 2 teams in the National League who are within 6 games. The Padres are 6.5 back, depending on what happens to the Phillies today. So there's still so many teams. There are like 20 teams, basically 15 to 20 teams who are still like big time in the race for playoff spots. So there's only 10 teams who are selling, and those 10 teams who are selling either don't have a lot of great assets that people want to trade for, or the ones that they do are going to be expensive, you know? So it's tough. You kind of you almost have to wait until like the 26th, 27th of July, another week, to see what happens to those teams who are on the fringe. Like, will the Red Sox and the Yankees fade? Will the Mets continue to be bad and decide to like trade Verlander and Scherzer?
If I were Toronto,
those would be guys who are interesting.
If I were Toronto, I would go straight for the mild overpay with Chicago now, and just to get it done, because we're talking about 7 or 8 games.
Yeah, that's two extra starts for Stroman. If you get him now, he could make in this month, and Bellinger could get into 10 extra games. You're right. Like it is with a starting pitcher, it makes sense to do the deals early. Like they did the Barrios deal way before the deadline.
I would do it like in fucking immediately.
Right now, so that you can get him in on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't know where Stroman last pitched. There's not enough time left in the season to wait 10 games. And if they decide they don't want to do that, well, then I don't see, like, again, we're in a wild card spot.
Stroman's pitching today, so he wouldn't be able to pitch on Sunday.
He's pitching tonight. So he's going to be, regardless, he's going to be 5 days away from starting again.
Yeah. Bellinger's hitting .311 right now with 12 home runs. He's also stolen 12 bases.
I only care about his power
playing
and
center
his
field
OBP.
For the most part.
He would be a dramatic improvement over Kirk at DH. and he could do a little bit.
894 OPS this season.
Of infield. Yeah, and like if even if we were to not get Stroman, I would do Otto Lopez for Cody Bellinger.
Yeah, Bellinger has 339 average his last 30 days, OPS just shy of 900. It's 898.
I just hope they don't wait until the last minute, and I hope they don't get outbid by the Orioles or the Yankees.
That's what I'm worried about, too, is those teams making more moves.
That's why I'm saying overpay now just to get it done. And that way you have a longer runway of games where you can get these guys in.
Yeah, the problem is
Otto Lopez ain't starting any games for the rest of the year unless
something bad happens to Bo.
At least there's like six injuries.
And it's like the thing that the Jays are always hesitant with is they don't like to trade for players who don't have control. They seem to really like those guys who have control. But every once in a while you need that David Price acquisition, right? You need that you need that big one to bring in a guy who, I mean, you're still, in theory, you're still well within striking distance for the division. The division lead has shrunk from double digits down to six games or whatever it is now. So you're not out of it there. The Jays, in the year they won the division, was it the 2015 season or whatever, whichever year it was that they won the division? Yeah, 2015.
I guess.
They clawed back from being down to come back and take it. So it's like, it's not out of reach, and sometimes you got to make a splash.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah. But
I think we're...
Yeah, games in Seattle, 10:10 Eastern time tomorrow night. It's a late one for you East Coasters.
Yeah, won't
it's a late one for
that.
Me. 8 o'clock is late for me. But 4:10 Eastern on Saturday, so still an evening game for the East Coast. And then 4:10 on Sunday as well. No off day for the Blue Jays on Monday. I would say it's probably likely that our next episode will come after the Dodger series. And unfortunately, it's too early to preview that one yet. But there is a day off after the Dodger series, along with a getaway game on the Wednesday. And there's a day off on Thursday before they come home. So we'll come back probably after that Dodger series and see how this West Coast trip goes, and maybe the Blue Jays will have made a move or two by then. Maybe Hyunjin Ryu will be recalled before that Angels series too. We'll see. It's going to be a spicy weekend, though, I think. quick before we go, predictions for this series, Patrick. How many games are the Blue Jays going to win?
Against Seattle?
Yes.
With Alec Manoa starting? One.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, you look at it, and Gausman's your likeliest win, but he's also up against Gilbert. If you can win the Kikuchi game tomorrow night, you've got a shot to win two games in the series, and I think that's the best we can hope for is a 2 out of 3. The Mariners are they only have 7 less wins than the Blue Jays. It's not like they're a terrible baseball team. They're not that far out of it.
What better time to throw Alec Manoa out there, eh, than when the stakes couldn't be higher?
Yeah.
I'm tired of talking. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Nope. So Patrick's hoping for one win. I mean, obviously hoping for more, but saying one win, and I'm going to say 2 just because I want to be different. And I think they can get
it done. I'd love to be wrong, man. I really would. Wouldn't it be great? Alec Manoa goes out there and throws 8 innings and has 14 strikeouts.
I would love that. I think that would be tremendous. But
yeah, I'd be happy.
I would say... not impossible, just highly improbable.
Yeah, but
that'll be it for us. We'll come back after the Dodgers series, 6 games on the West Coast, little AL West action. Hope everyone who's going down to the games from Western Canada has a blast in Seattle. It's a great city. Be nice and loud for the boys there at AT&T or T-Mobile Park. Sorry, it's called
T-Mobile Park.
Yeah, be nice and loud. Make it Rogers Center West like it usually is on these weekend series games. Make Mariners fans jealous of how well the Blue Jays fans travel. And then maybe some of you are going down to L.A. to continue on the road trip with some interleague action. Jays only get there to Dodger Stadium every so often. It'll be every 2 years now going forward, which is great. Love that. But enjoy both series on the road for anyone who's going. Make lots of noise. For everybody who's not going... We'll be back after that Dodgers series to recap everything that happens. We'll tee up the final homestand of July against the Angels and then against the Baltimore Orioles. And hopefully the Blue Jays can continue to win more games than they're losing lately, which is what you need to see at this time of the year. But for Patrick out in Halifax, I'm Justin here in Saskatoon. We'll see you next time.